This podcast is brought to you by Monetary Gold. Listeners who open a qualified account will receive up to $5,000 in free gold or silver. To learn more, go to monetarygold.com/grace. That's monetarygold.com/grace.
The numbers are in. Listeners are voting often and early for Grace Curley, just like they did for her adopted grandfather. From year one to number one.
Make it so, number one.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald, the Spectator, and the Daily Mail.
You got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice, Grace Curley.
Now, live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, the millennial with the mic, the Grace Curley Show.
Especially Grace. Grace, stand up.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. Thank you all so much for joining me today. There are massive floods in Florida. Ron DeSantis is live right now. Actually, let's take a little bit of this, Jared. This is Governor Ron DeSantis.
Put an emphasis on infrastructure, partially because the state is growing, but we understand in a situation like this. You know, we had a bridge knocked out with Hurricane Sally because you had a barge that was left loose and it rammed the bridge. So we were able to fix that, but it's not something that happens overnight. So to me, I think the more issue is, we'll have resources between federal and state and local. I'm pretty confident of that. But it's, okay, this is an island that you're not going to be able to access by car until that is done. And so what's going to be the plan to do? And that's just going to be something we're going to consult with the local leaders at the city level and at the county level to try to figure out what the best is. But, you know, when you deal with these things, you stabilize, you provide the help with people, but you want to get back to some semblance of normalcy as quickly as possible. And it's going to be harder in some areas than others, but I want to, you know, let's work on Sanibel and let's bring it back to where it was as soon as we can.
That is Ron DeSantis. He's in Punta Gorda, Florida, and he's live right now. There are 2.5 million, and this was this morning, so there's probably more now, million people without power, and it is now a tropical storm, but there's no road access in Sanibel, Florida. We will keep you posted as we learn more, and also we have Jerry calling in at 2:30. He's going to give us a little update on what's happening. If you're not familiar with Jerry, he's a member of the Howie Carter Radio Network. I'm looking forward to hearing from him. There's an interesting piece in the New York Post. I don't know if people remember that there was an FBI whistleblower, Stephen Friend, and if he were a liberal whistleblower, if he were whistleblowing on Republicans or on a corrupt right-wing organization, Stephen would be a hero. Stephen would be on the cover of Time magazine. Stephen would be on Sox. Stephen would be getting a book deal. Stephen would be the toast of the town. But instead, I didn't really hear much about him. But Miranda Devine has a piece that talks about 30 ex-FBI agents who stood up to support the whistleblower who exposed the agency's political bias. Now, Stephen Friend is the whistleblower at the heart of this story, but other players involved here make me think that the FBI has a big issue on its hands because these are not low-rung officials. These are not people who are getting coffee. Now, there's anything wrong with that. I get coffee still all the time. Not hating on the coffee runners or Carter Page or any of that. All I'm saying is these were high up people who know how this operation works, who are coming forward to defend Stephen Friend. So let me just read you a little bit from Miranda Devine's column. I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but there were some parts of it I found noteworthy. She says 30 former FBI agents, including a retired deputy assistant director, head of counterterrorism, and 5 SWAT team members have spoken out publicly in support of suspended FBI whistleblower Stephen Friend. Their heartfelt messages show a deep and widespread anguish about the politicization of the FBI. It's time to stop the FBI from being the enforcer of a political party's ideology, says Ernie Tibaldi, a retired agent from San Francisco. We need to reestablish the FBI as the apolitical and independent law enforcement entity that it always was. I would obviously disagree with that characterization of the FBI, but I appreciate the sentiment nonetheless. He expressed gratitude to Friend for having the courage to stand up to the corruption that has taken over the leadership of the FBI. Many former agents hailed Friend, a SWAT team member in Florida, as a hero after he was punished for refusing to participate in what he regarded as unnecessarily heavy-handed SWAT raids over January 6 misdemeanors. You know what my mind immediately goes to? The Lego set. He was probably one of the guys who was looking at it going, really? We need to storm this house to get a Lego set? You think we could rein it back? You think we could lower the temperature a little bit here, guys? In his whistleblower complaint to the Department of Justice Inspector General, Friend alleged that the FBI had been manipulating case file management in order to falsely inflate the threat of domestic terrorism and using unconstitutional excessive force against political dissenters. What? That doesn't sound like the FBI that I know.
That's crazy talk.
I'm really, really, really.
Next, you're gonna say they infiltrated groups to go in the January 6th thing. Come on.
Next, you're gonna say that they're plotting to kidnap Governor Gretchen Whitmer, and then also They're also plotting to unravel the kidnapping plot. Plotting, unraveling, plotting again.
The FBI is confident they can catch themselves in the act.
They can. They'll solve any crime by dinner time. Terry Turchi, former deputy assistant director of the FBI's counterterrorism division, describes Friend as a model example of what FBI agents nationwide should be. Again, Jared, the thing that struck me the most about this piece, and it's really, it goes into a lot of detail, and you should definitely check it out. But the thing that stuck out to me the most is that these people all have very important high up jobs. I mean, this guy's former deputy assistant director of the FBI's counterterrorism division. And he's standing up for the whistleblower who's saying they were pushing it when it comes to politicizing their dissenters and politicizing the FBI. Moral courage, leadership in the face of pressure, and true to the oath of office FBI agents take to defend the United States Constitution and protect America and its citizens. I am beyond proud to offer him my support in the decisions he had to make. Turchi, who led the Unabomber Task Force, says he didn't even use a SWAT team in 1996 to arrest Kaczynski, a violent domestic terrorist who had killed 3 people and injured 23 others. No real FBI agent would defend the position of using SWAT teams to arrest nonviolent senior citizens and others with political opinions not currently tolerated by this administration. This activity actually generates tension in communities and increases the potential for tragic results and injuries to FBI agents and citizens. Yeah, because you're poking a bear. Think about all of those PTA meetings, all of those school board meetings, where parents who had a problem with, you could name anything, whether it be curriculum or boys being in the girls' bathroom, they were dragged out of these meetings like they were terrorists. And Merrick Garland did everything he could to make sure people knew that that's how they regarded these concerned parents. You're egging people on to be violent if you start treating them like this. And that's why I was one of the people who was very much, when it came to the Donald Trump raid, when it came to a lot of these things the FBI has been up to lately, I say, don't let this trap you or trick you into doing something dumb, because that's the last thing we need. Because there's nothing they want more at this point than another January 6th. They want another reason to have hearings, to have investigations, to have impeachments, to have this, to have that, to have something to run against. Because right now they don't have anything. Right now they have an old man who can't figure out how to get off a stage, who's destroyed our economy, who has destroyed our border, and who has no idea what he's saying. And they would love to switch the narrative. They would love to distract people. They would love for those semi-fascist MAGA Republicans they always talk about to prove them right. And I don't think that's going to happen. I really appreciate knowing, though, some of the people who are backing this whistleblower. And I've always thought, like, where, you know, I know people always say, oh, 99.999% of the FBI is great. You don't have to worry about 99.9% of them. And then, you know, another story would come out, another story and a missed flag. And, you know, oh, they had the red flag for this shooter and they dropped the ball on that. But they managed to arrest Peter Navarro and put him in a John Hinckley cell. Like, there were just so many things that they had time for. And then big things like Larry Nassar that they didn't have time for, that eventually I started to say, don't feed me the 99.999% stuff, because I'm not buying that. I got to at this point just go with the anecdotal evidence that I'm seeing on a day-to-day basis. With that being said, it's nice to know that there are even a few. If there's 30 guys who haven't completely lost their mind, and there's probably women too, maybe. It's nice to know that there is some sanity left in these organizations that I look at now as almost completely corrupt. Hey, one more thing. Fauci's net worth soared to $12.6 million during the pandemic, up $5 million. Must be nice, right? Did anyone else have that good of a two-year period? Because things were looking good for Dr. Fauci. When we come back, I want to talk to Dan Rizzo from Rizzo Insurance, because a lot of people have questions right now about their insurance. We're going to ask him some questions on behalf of our Florida listeners, too. But just in general, insurance is going to go up. If you have any questions for Dan Rizzo, get on the line now. I'll go right to them when we come back. It's 844-500-4242. Don't go anywhere. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Hi, it's Toby from Cape Gunworks. I'm taking all your firearm and self-defense questions every Tuesday. Join Grace and me for 2A Tuesday, Tuesdays at 2 p.m.
She's a master at pouncing, weaponizing, and seizing.
To give you a reference point, I'm somewhere between a snake and a mongoose. And a panther.
She's Grace Curley.
Everyone, and welcome back to The Grace Curley Show. We've been covering Hurricane Ian, which has now turned into a tropical storm. It's not yet over. We will be talking to Jerry from the Howie Carr Radio Network in the next segment about what's actually happening in Florida. We just took a little bit of Ron DeSantis, the governor, live, and it seems like they've made some progress and they're definitely ready to get things moving in the right direction. Joining me now to talk about this is Dan Rizzo from Rizzo Insurance. Dan, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Grace. Thank you for having me.
Now, Dan, when something like this happens, and obviously you look at the wreckage, you look at the homes, you look at the cars floating in the streets, what are most people going to be dealing with in Florida as far as getting money to cover this via their insurance? Because I think when most people think of insurance, they think of paying a lot of money. And then when things go wrong, there's always these caveats in the insurance.
Yeah, well, you know, I think first off, with a storm of this magnitude, I think the Division of Insurance in Florida will be very actively and heavily involved in making sure that claims are being paid timely and fairly. You know, with respect to vehicles, you had mentioned vehicles, and I think all of us saw those floating vehicles, like, unfortunately with the storm surge and the heavy rainfall. So, people that have comprehensive insurance that would cover, theft, vandalism, and in this case, flooding, would be able to collect money for their vehicles. And, you know, presumably all those vehicles are going to be total losses. If they don't have comprehensive, then unfortunately they will not have coverage for vehicles. When it comes to homes, I think it's important that people, that have had damage as a result of the storm, that they document as best they can all of their belongings inside. The outside will be pretty easy to figure that out, but inside you want to document all of your belongings, because those will be covered as a result of the hurricane, to the extent that that they can compile a list and present it to the insurance carriers. I think what people have to be concerned about or just be aware of is that, especially in Florida, there are named storm deductibles or hurricane deductibles.
What does that mean?
So typically you'll have a deductible on a homeowner policy that could be $500, $1,000, $2,500. But in the case of a hurricane deductible, it's usually a percentage, a 2% deductible, a 5% deductible of your coverage A, which would be, let's say, for example, you have a home that's worth $500,000. If you've got a 2% deductible, that means your deductible is not going to be that $1,000 or $500 or $2,500. It's going to be 2% or $10,000. So those are some of the things that I think you have to be aware of. Fortunately, Governor DeSantis, has announced that there will be assistance from FEMA, from SBA. So people that are going to have trouble meeting that deductible in order to get their homes repaired or fixed, will have access to sources of funding that can help, I believe, with those deductibles.
And when it happens in the case of Florida, there's just so many people right now. I mean, 2.5 million people don't have power, the damage that has been done. How quickly can people expect their insurance companies to, you know, actually come through with this help? Are they going to be overwhelmed? Are they ready for this in general?
When you're talking 2.5 million people, I'm not too sure of the infrastructure with all the respective insurance carriers. As a lot of people know who may own property in Florida, that insurance companies have been leaving the state as opposed to coming into the state. They're leaving. Getting insurance is becoming difficult in Florida, certainly in coastal areas. And if you can get it, you're paying dearly for it. So, but that being said, in terms of people that are going to be responding to these claims, when you have so many properties that have been impacted, I would have to believe that there's only so many claims adjusters. I would imagine that these insurance companies will be calling in adjusters from around the country to be able to go out and assess damage and start to write checks. But it's going to be a monumental task for these insurance carriers because there's just such a enormous number of properties to assess. And, there's only so many people that are in that field that can do that.
And how does it affect the people in Florida, their insurance going forward when something like this happens? What can they expect in the future?
Well, people that have insurance in Florida right now recognize that their premiums have just been going up astronomically. I mean, exponentially year over year over year. And an event like this is certainly not going to do anything to stem that. I think that unfortunately you're going to see continued increases in premiums. I don't know. I know Governor DeSantis has been working. I've been reading about him working on different reforms and different measures to help make insurance more readily available at premiums that people can afford, but it's going to take a lot, and I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. I think you're going to see, unfortunately, you're going to see continued higher premiums.
And besides, making a list, which I think is probably the first step people need to do, what's other advice that you would give people right now in these situations?
Well, you don't want to go out. I think intuitively people want to go out and they want to start fixing things, I think you should absolutely check with your insurance carrier because you can protect or mitigate any damage from the storm. But to go in and start repairing things before your insurance carrier has a chance to get in and look could present a problem to you. I think the other thing, and I'm sure they'll be talking more about this as time goes along, and I mean, I've seen it personally up here, where you get an occasional unscrupulous contractor. And I think they're going to be swarming around down there. So I think people have to be very careful before forking over money to a contractor, that they're not familiar with.
That's really good advice. And that's something to definitely be careful of. Dan, what's your website if people want to check it out?
It's RizzoInsurance.com.
Dan Rizzo from Rizzo Insurance. Thank you so much for coming on the show. RizzoInsurance.com. We will be right back with Jerry live from Florida. Don't go anywhere. It's the Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
They're wondering what's going to be left. What's going to be left when they get to go home, quote unquote home, or even if they have a home to go to.
Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. That was Joe Biden today at the FEMA press conference. And joining us now to talk about what's going on in Florida is a member of the Howie Carr Radio Network, Jerry. Jerry, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Grace. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm very good, Jerry. And before we even get into how you're doing, can you explain to people where in Florida you are?
Yeah, so I'm located in Bradenton, which is right next door to Sarasota. And we are about 60 to 70 miles north of Sanibel, Fort Myers area that really, really got the devastation of this storm. For us in this area, a lot of tree damage, some flooding in some areas, but not too bad. A lot of power outages, obviously. We were fortunate in our area. We didn't have a power outage.
Wow.
But the devastation that is down in Sanibel, it's unexplainable, Grace. Listen, I've lived through the blizzard of 78 and some of the big hurricanes that we've had up there. I've lived here for 13 years. It's like nothing I've ever seen. My heart breaks for these people.
Wow. And Jerry, what about the flooding? Like, tell us about what's going on with the, I know it's been massive amounts of rain.
It is. So you can't even see areas that used to have streets, you can't even see where the streets are. It's like literally, it's just like a bunch of houses in the middle of the ocean or the middle of the lake. That's what it looks like.
And Jerry, I think sometimes, especially in a place like Florida, where you guys get warnings all the time about a hurricane and, you know, these things tend to happen at least once a year where there's talk of something happening. And then oftentimes it doesn't end up being as bad as people think it's going to be. Do you think that people were heeding the advice of the local officials? And do you think that people really understood that this is something that you don't see every day and that they need to either evacuate or, put in some precautions? Or were people kind of thinking, well, they say this all the time and we'll probably be fine?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of both. But what was actually funny about this storm is for the longest time, it was predicted to just hit us directly in our area. And then something happened overnight in the course of like 2 to 3 hours where it shifted significantly to the south. So I think those people that were down there were like, okay, well, it's coming toward us. It's pretty close. They're still predicting it to go well north of us. So I think we're going to be pretty safe. And it just, I think most of the people that live directly on the water that have been through this before probably evacuated. But Grace, since the pandemic, there are a lot of new residents down here in this area that haven't experienced it. And a lot of them stayed and are probably regretting it today.
And it's not over yet. What are you guys hearing as far as what's yet to come?
Yeah. So, for in our area right now, we're cleared of it all. It's sunny and 78 right now. It's a tropical depression. So that, Orlando area receives a significant amount of rain, almost 20 inches, I believe. So it's going through them, and it's approaching the Carolinas now, and they're supposed to get a significant amount of rain in Charlotte, that I know, over the next 24 hours.
Jerry, anything else you want to add in here before we let you go? We thank you so much for giving us these updates. Is there anything else you saw that you think is worth relaying to people here in New England?
When they predict something like this, you got to take it seriously. You really do. And if you have the opportunity to, secure your house and your belongings and you can go somewhere else, please heed the warning, because I've seen firsthand the devastation, and it's just not worth hanging around for. That's what we have homeowners insurance for. That's what we have flood insurance for. And there are plenty of facilities down here to go to protect you from the elements that come through here, the hurricanes. So that's probably the best advice I can give to people.
Jerry, we thank you so much for coming on the show. Great job with the report, and stay safe. And I know you'll be seeing Howie very soon. So thanks for all of the help.
Yes, thank you very much. I look forward to seeing you guys.
Absolutely. We have other topics here that I'd like to hit before we bring on Howie at the 2:45, including a little headline. I only gave you a little tease of this, but I do think it's worth noting. Dr. Fauci's net worth soared to $12.6 million during the pandemic, up $5 million. Last night, the auditors at OpenTheBooks.com received Dr. Anthony Fauci's 2021 financial disclosures from the National Institutes of Health. You might remember Rand Paul was asking a lot of questions about this.
We had a collaboration with some Chinese scientists.
The documents contain a wealth of previously unknown information. I like the phrasing of that. For example, the Fauci household's net worth now exceeds $12.6 million, up $5 million from 2019 through 2021.
What happened during that time?
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Timing is everything. In January 2022, U.S. Senator Roger Marshall forced open Dr. Anthony Fauci's unredacted 2019 and 2020 financial disclosures. The release followed a heated Senate exchange between Fauci and Marshall that concluded with Fauci calling the senator a moron. I remember that. He kind of muttered it under his breath. It was Fauci's code red moment when America's top doctor melted down on national television in the Senate hearing. It's been a dogfight to open the books on the Fauci's finances. For example, our organization has filed four federal lawsuits versus NIH to open the books. Today, we post more of the financial disclosures that Dr. Fauci didn't want you to see. Here's a summary. Net worth. Like I mentioned, the Fauci household disclosed net worth increased from $7.6 million to $12.6 million. Fauci continues to be the most highly compensated federal employee.
Does that take into account residual sales from cookies and crackers that he bakes in his tree?
You got your shot in. It actually took you a long time today. You're usually a little faster than that.
Well, unlike Fauci, I am judicious with my shots.
Big awards. In 2021, this is what I'm interested in. Fauci augmented his government income with nearly $1 million in prizes. When was the last time you won a prize, Jared?
Is that like The Price is Right? Did he get the Showcase Showdown?
I can't remember the last time I won a prize. It was too long ago. You know,
I won a comic book giveaway on Whatnot the other day, but.
You did? Well,
That's a prize.
Yeah, that's something. That's something to be proud of. That's something to hang your hat on. I was at an event, like a dinner thing the other night, and they were giving away a bottle of tequila to whoever had three little beans in their espresso martini. And I didn't. I had the regular two. But I thought, can someone just give me one of the espresso beans and I'll raise my hand? Some guy beat me to it. So he's winning all these prizes, nearly $1 million in prizes from nonprofit organizations across the world. For example, the Dan David Foundation, based in Israel, awarded $901,000, a little over that, for speaking truth to power and defending science during the Trump administration. I wonder if Don Lemon will get this award next. He lived in Florida. He's speaking truth to power as well, and he's defending the science against that terrible hurricane expert on his show. During the ongoing pandemic of 2021, the Fauci's household income, perks and benefits, and unrealized investments gained total $2,800,000 and change, including federal income and benefits of $903,000. I'm just kind of rounding here. Outside awards and royalties totaling $1 million and $910,174 in investment gains. Investment gains. Dude, Fauci's doing pretty good.
No wonder he's retiring.
I know, it's about time. It's about time. But I don't think it was ever about the money for Fauci. I would go on a limb and say that. It was never about the money for this guy. It was solely about the power and the fame and controlling the narrative. And whenever I had Scott Hounsell on, he's a friend of mine. He's a great writer at Red State. He would always say, like, why this? You know, I think it's a really good question to ask. Why this pandemic? Because there's been other diseases. There's been other things where he could have been the face of it. And I know he's been public. I know a lot of people had heard about him before. But he's never been so hell-bent on being everywhere and being the absolute, without a doubt, face of a problem until now. And that makes me think there was a reason behind that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he did such a bang-up job with HIV. We needed the sequel, so.
That exactly. I mean, there was plenty of other times where he wasn't as upfront.
We know why he was trying so hard, too.
Yeah.
But obviously, there's no evidence.
By the way, I had referenced this, but I brought the story back in. Nate Cohn, who's the chief political reporter for the New York Times, delivers some straight talk that should worry Democrats a lot. All right, so let's read this. This is from Hot Air, but they quote Cohn's New York Times piece. For most of the summer, President Biden and the Democrats had the political winds at their back. You remember that, everyone. That was all the successes.
The winning streak.
Yeah, he was on a roll. Give him his leather jacket. Give him his aviators. The aviators were the sign of the good times. He was just knocking it out of the park. He couldn't be stopped. Well, within the last 6 weeks, with 6 weeks until November, there are a few signs that the political winds may have begun to blow in a different direction. One that might help Republicans over the final stretch. The political spotlight may be drifting back toward issues where Republicans have an advantage, like the economy and immigration. I don't know why we have an advantage with the economy, because Biden's doing a great job. I was told inflation was at 0%. I also don't know why we have an advantage with immigration, because I was told by Mayorkas, Kamala, KJP, Joe Biden, that the border is secure. So why would those be? Why is the New York Times telling me that would be in my advantage as a Republican, that I have
more fake news?
I have the upper ground on those issues. I don't think so. It can be difficult to discern these kinds of subtle shifts in the national mood, but Google search trends offers a decent rough measure. For the first time since the Dobbs ruling overturning Roe versus Wade, Google searches for the economy and immigration have overtaken searches about abortion, searches for democracy, or the January 6th hearings have also fallen. I think that is the whole story right there. Google search tells you a lot more than Nate Silver's latest poll, in my opinion. Everybody uses Google. Not everybody's given pollsters a real answer. 844-500-4242.
Mark, get set. We're riding on the internet. Cyberspace set free. Hello, virtual reality.
Can't you just picture it? Somebody on their computer. Can you give me 7 ways the recession will actually be good for me? Well, yes, we can. Have you seen this piece from the Washington Post? Have you looked at your retirement account lately? Probably not. I have seen the mail sitting on my counter that's going to show me what's in there, and I just politely decline. I say, I do a Simon Cowell to the retirement accounts, and I say, it's going to be a no for me. My little heart can't take no more right now.
I'm waiting for a Fauci prize to bring my account back up.
Yes, we all need a little boost in our spirits right now. Wall Street is in a downturn and is taking your retirement money with it. There's a recession looming, and the fact is that we're in a financial storm, and the global economy is weakening. And can you blame any of this? I mean, really, it was bound to happen. We have a guy in the White House who has no idea what he's doing. He's not taking any financial advice from anyone who actually might know what's going to happen. And instead, he takes it from Janet Yellen and all these people who told you inflation was going to be transitory. And now we're all sitting around scratching our heads going, how do we get here? Well, that's why you need a hedge to protect your retirement so you don't lose any more money. And my friends at Monetary Gold would like to send you 2 free guides. The first one is called 5 Money Mistakes That Could Crush Your Retirement in the Next 6 Months, and the 2022 Monetary Gold Protection Guide. These free guides will show you how to protect your assets and get through this financial crisis. Did you know that during the high inflation of the 70s, gold increased in value 2,300%? And today, you can now buy physical gold or silver and roll over your IRA or 401k retirement account. Because gold or silver can really help you diversify your risk and protect your retirement in these uncertain times. But I'm not asking you to do anything crazy. I understand you probably want to learn more about it. So if you call Monetary Gold now, you'll get 2 free guides. You just have to make the call. The number is 800-267-6500. Again, that's 800-267-6500, or go to monetarygold.com/grace. That's 800-267-6500, or go to monetarygold.com/grace. One more time, because I really want you to get these 2 free guides. It's 800-267-6500. We will be right back with Howie Carr. This is The Grace Curley Show.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back. This is The Grace Curley Show.
So the United States shares a very important relationship, which is an alliance with the Republic of North Korea. And it is an alliance that is strong and enduring.
Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. That was Vice President Kamala Harris, and that brings us to our poll question. Today's poll question is brought to you by Monetary Gold. Listeners who open a qualified account will receive up to $5,000 in free gold or silver. To learn more, go to monetarygold.com/grace. Jared, what's the poll question, and what are the results thus far?
What's Kamala's worst geography gaffe so far? Saying North Korea instead of South Korea, confusing the NATO northern flank and eastern flank, or rarely, if ever, saying northern triangle.
I'm going to go with the most recent. What about you, Howie?
Yeah, I'll go with the most recent one. I've never heard anyone confuse North and South Korea. It's like confusing ketchup and mustard.
Yeah, but anytime you think it can't be done, she proves you wrong. So we'll both vote for that one.
76% of the audience is with you, say confusing North Korea and South Korea.
Now, Howie, I was playing earlier some cuts from Larry Summers, and he was talking about how we've lost the plot when it comes to inflation. This goes directly against what Joe Biden's telling us, which is everything's going according to plan. What do you think?
Well, there was a story, I think, from CNBC saying that $9 trillion in household worth has vanished in the last year or so. $9 trillion. Now, if that's the plan, then, you know, I want to say, let's come up with a new plan.
Yeah, let's pivot even slightly. But they never do that. There's never any self-reflection on what can we do better. And in fact, Howie, and I know I've already played this, but it kind of is worth playing to get your take on it, is Krasner and the comments he was making when confronted with the crime rate and the deaths, the murders that are happening in Philadelphia. Can I have this cut, Jared?
There are multiple things going on in the system, but it has never been the case before until we had reform prosecutors where people tried to blame just one entity. We all have to work together, and the reality is that we have been more effective.
You are a reform district attorney. Everybody in the country knows that. But maybe it's not working.
It is working. The reality is that our
conviction... There's 1,000 people killed in 20 months.
It is working. The reality is when you look at all these different jurisdictions...
How do you hear that number and just keep going with the script?
Well, you know, I think in this case, when he says reform, the questioner says reform district attorney, what is it? The synonym is Soros district attorney.
Right.
You know, I mean, if somebody gets shot down in the street by somebody that was involved in a heinous crime less than a year ago, and you didn't even either try to prosecute him or just did a continued without a finding or is settled for probation, and that's why he's not behind bars, then it's not on somebody else. It's on you. You have to take responsibility. The prosecutor is one of those jobs where the buck stops here.
Right. And we've seen this with so many of these district attorneys. It's amazing. But then we also see situations where in certain places, people are still voting for these Soros-backed district attorneys. So it hasn't really hit people yet that
right.
This is a big problem.
You know, Boston dodged a real bullet in the primaries. I mean, Ricardo Arroyo was another one of these guys. I mean, Rachel Rollins was terrible, and she's terrible as the U.S. attorney, but Arroyo would have been worse.
Yeah, people need to start learning their lessons.
It was a close call.
It was. Too close for comfort. Okay, Howie Carr is coming up next. He's got a great show planned. We'll be back tomorrow for our Friday show. Don't go anywhere.